Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. Bam! See, was that different, Travis? Travis is here, and we have a special guest joining us, Ronnie Barron.
Hello.
You know, I'm going to put like I'm going to put a cheer sound there. I'm going to do like the pipe organ. Anyways, welcome, Ronnie.
Welcome.
You haven't been on this show in 37 years.
I haven't been on a show, nonetheless, this one.
That is very true.
In a while.
Very true. Let's see. It's true. I'm looking at it right now. Your last episode was July 26th. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's a long time. Time flies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have a jam-packed episode. Strawberry jam with peanut butter.
Yeah.
Because we didn't record last week. So we're talking about all kinds of books today. Should we talk about this week's books first?
I think we should talk about last week's first.
All right. Good answer.
Is that like eating your meal before you have dessert?
Yes.
It's time travel.
Sure. Ronnie, since you haven't been on in a while, you get first pick this week.
Well, you know what I'm going to pick. So you should already have it up.
Are you picking Killer Groove number 4?
No.
What?
I mean, we can talk about that one. That's fine. But since our reception is messed up, I was going to pick Bad Reception number 1.
Bad Reception number 1. Written, created, artisted, and lettered by one Doe. That's easy. So easy, even Ronnie can pronounce it.
That's right. I was going to do it.
All right, Ronnie. I know you love this book, so give me a little what'd you like about this?
It is one thing that Aftershock does well, which is have a simple story that is actually complex once you actually get into it. And it's Wando, and we know that his art's awesome. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But the concept is pretty awesome. And I know you guys side-chatted about it. And so I wanted to talk about it because there's tons of stuff that – I mean, the first, three or four pages, maybe more, maybe six, it's just word balloons with some blood splatter. Until you actually see what's happened.
Yeah, I would love to see those pages like side by side.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's every page is like a piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes like this landscape of this woman laying down, bleeding out. And that's kind of how you set up the story. Yeah, I would love to see that all in one. It was good way to build atmosphere for sure.
Yep.
So I think, you know, for the first time that he's writing a book, I think it's pretty successful in setting up the story that he wants to tell.
Yep. And the last panel of that sequence is the zoom in on the phone with the bloody fingerprints on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the face of the phone, it says no signal.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has bad reception.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it's called?
The wedding reception, though.
Oh, it's a double reception.
Double reception, yes.
It's a reception inception. Episode title, see? You see how we did that? Bam!
Yeah.
I gotta write that down because I'll forget it. Travis, you seem to be not as receptive from the couple of comments we threw back and forth. Or maybe it was just that one thing that you threw out that I was like, I think Travis might not like this. So give me your initial impressions of this book.
I think at this point I don't fully know how to feel, you know, because like my hot take, I guess, maybe that you're referring to is I kind of found most of the characters pretty unlikable, and I wonder if that is the point, is that like some of this like over the top like slangy banter or what, you know, like the different character stuff that you're getting from these people is like so that you can be like, oh yeah, this guy's annoying. Like I want to see this guy die. So like I don't know. There's that, and like you know, it certainly it's like really high concept, but I feel like it's. Maybe just like bordering on a little bit preachy and at least in the way it was laid out in this issue, like kind of front heavy, like, oh, this is like all of the like terrible stuff about social media, you know, like, I don't know.
But I mean, you kind of have to have that in there, right? To set up the concept of the book, because there's got to be a reason why this person who's like the top social media superstar is not going to be using her phone, right? So you meet this researcher who's doing research on the impact of social media on like psychology and culture and stuff. And you know, like Ronnie mentioned, you have those first, you know, 5 or 6 pages that are just the one page with dialogue. And it's basically just like a script of an NPR interview, basically. And the interviewer, like, I don't know if like the interviewer really buys into the whole concept. It could just be like the way that he's conducting the interview that made it seem that way to me. But you know, I listen to a lot of tech podcasts, and like I've heard this exact argument in dozens of podcast episodes. So to me, it didn't feel preachy. It felt very real life because I've seen this exact argument being brought out, and it's an argument that I don't necessarily disagree with either. So, I mean, I guess I can understand where it might seem a little preachy, but I think that's kind of the point. Because if you didn't have that, why are we having this wedding with no reception, right?
I have a question for Travis, too.
Okay.
Since I'm the special guest host. So, this issue to you was too preachy, but then when we had issue 1 of A Walk Through Hell, you didn't think that was too preachy?
Touche.
Oh no, I thought that I had objected to at least kind of how like incongruous that was in Walk Through Hell. That it's like my objection, I guess, was more from you know the angle of what does this have to do with the story? Obviously, that's not an objection. In this instance, I guess maybe, I don't know, like, I'll take your point. Maybe I feel it's a little bit on the nose, but I guess in like a few pages of, like, setup, I can buy that, you know, like, that this is how you kind of, like, suspend disbelief and set up the rationale for, like, the premise of the whole story. You know, I am, I guess, curious about kind of like from the logic of this story, what's happening with their decision to do this and like on a larger level, like how these two, Gaia and Blase, like get together in the first place, seem like given they seem to kind of being like at least like polar opposites on this one dynamic, you know, and it, like personally, it seems to me like he is trying to force this, like we're going to do this off the grid because it's my thing on her and she's going along. Like it seems to be against her own instincts.
I don't know if it's against her instincts though. It's just not the life that she leads.
Yeah. And it's like that Paula Abdul song, Opposites Attract.
Did you just quote a Paula Abdul song on this podcast?
I did.
You leave for 5 weeks!
Or did you quote
weeks?
A talking cat?
But I think, see, I don't know if it's against her wishes either, because I took it as, you know, sometimes you get burnt out of things and you unplug or undo whatever that thing that is that you're burnt out on. And if they're doing the wedding and she is the social media goddess person, I mean, famous people do this all the time, right? Where they don't have where they say they're going to get married somewhere and then they end up getting married somewhere else, so it's not all paparazzied out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see it necessarily as a bad thing. And as someone who is in getting into the habit of unplugging, I think it's a great thing.
So, Martin, I got a question for you, too, because of your guys' interaction before we actually talked. Because you brought up Travis's digressions before. You didn't seem too high on it before either.
Well, obviously you missed my tweet, because I said I love this book.
Well, I'm not. I just meant, like, what? Did you read it again and then change, or was it just straight out of the gate?
No, so the thing that I had an issue with at first was actually the beginning. Not artistically, but as I was reading those first few pages, I'm like, well, where are we going? Right? And then once you get to the end of the book and you see it as a whole, then is when I realized, like, okay, I can get behind the concept of this book.
Okay.
And then I really enjoyed it after that. I only read this once, actually. I didn't read it twice.
Well, yeah, I was just curious.
Yep. No, I really enjoyed it. And actually, I was surprised when I saw your reaction, because I felt like Ronnie's not going to like this book. Like, I knew you would like the art, because we're all Wando fans. But in terms of the concept, I was like, I'm pretty sure Ronnie's going to think it's a little preachy. And I was wrong. It was Travis that said it.
It was the complete opposite. That's the theme of this episode.
Yeah, I was off.
See, opposites attract.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Paul Abdul. Way to go. But yeah, no, I enjoy that part. The thing, though, and I think Travis made this point, and I agree, I'm not sure, like, how much we're supposed to like any of these characters, because they're not really likable, you know what I mean? Like, Gaia's super friendly, but, like, they're all so superficial.
Yeah.
Right? They're very, like, two-dimensional.
What is that, like, what's that Ice Cube movie? Or not Ice Cube, Ice-T, maybe? Like, where they throw him in on the island and he's hunted down by rich people, right?
Oh, yeah.
What if this is, like, the opposite of that?
So, yeah, I don't know. My first thought was actually that maybe the doctor holding the experiment is maybe behind it. Maybe there's something that happened between her and Gaia at some point. Because we don't really know a whole lot about these people, right? You're doing a lot of setup here. But it seems to me like one of the more obvious possible culprits, if not the actual killer, then maybe like somehow related to that.
Or the UFC fighter.
Yeah, or the UFC fighter, which is, that's like Conor McGregor. Like straight up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which she mentions at least twice that he's been invited, but yet he's just gotten out of jail again.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Don't knock on Conor McGregor. He's the richest fighter in the world right now. He's worth like $100 million.
Yeah.
So he's doing all right. But yeah, he is always in trouble.
No, well, I wasn't talking about him per se. I was just talking about the bait and switch of the story where you're focused on him and he could be the most obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out that he's not.
Well, and I'm not sure if it's anybody that, like, we've actually seen, right? Like, we didn't see the doctor. Because, like, interspersed throughout the book, there are cut-in panels where you see, like, this guy hunting deer and then, like, skinning the deer.
Mm-hmm.
Which has me thinking, like, maybe it's just somebody on the island that lives there. And he's like, why are these dumb rich people here? I'm just going to kill them.
Yeah. Could be as simple as that. Yeah. But I doubt it.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I got the sense that it was happening in Yosemite. Like, didn't they say something about like El Capitan?
Yeah, yep. They sure did.
Which, like, yeah, good luck keeping that secret. You know, like, it must be the one, like, somehow the one week where nobody was at Yosemite. where I just came back from there, and there was a few people.
I'm sure there were.
Yeah. Okay, but, I mean, if we're talking about the mystery aspect of it, which, like, seems like that's really what the narrative kind of is, right? It's like a murder mystery. You see the corpse in the very beginning. Like, for some reason, I'm leaning towards the groom.
Mm.
Like, there's something, like, because, like, that's a swerve or something, and because, like, he obviously has some interest in this, like, social media experiment, and I am suspicious about, like, the nature of his relationship with this, like, social media queen. I don't know. Like, I feel like there, yeah, I take your point that maybe there's another person involved, like the guy that we see in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
But, like, the different things that you look at in this issue is like, oh, her dad's a convict, you know, like Conor McGregor, like, attacks people, you know, like, I feel like those are red herrings or something.
Could be. I do like the kind of diversity of the guests, though, I guess. Because they're not all just, like, social media people either, right? Like, she invites her best friend from college, and she's inviting her dad, and you've got Conor McGregor there and whatever, some of these other people. So that could be interesting. And I'm surprised, like, how small it is. I mean, I guess logistically, it'd probably be very difficult to not have, like, hundreds of people on their phone. But, I mean, the guesses is, what, like, less than 10 people?
Yeah, it's like 6 people.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I have one last thing to say before we wrap this book up, though.
Sure.
The last page.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You see the bloody book that he has written. And on top of that's the bloody phone, right?
Right.
So the subtitle of the book is How to Unplug from Social Media and Connect with Your Primal Side or mm-hmm. Self.
Yep.
But the title of the book is Hashtag Hashtag. Off the grid.
Yes.
Look, so that's like a
that's good marketing. Oxymoron. It's good marketing. It's like a built-in hashtag.
Yeah. Okay. We could have just done this whole episode about this book, like Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake skit. Just hashtag everything.
Mm.
Yeah, I just noticed on the bottom, Blaze is listed as the author.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is the one that he wrote.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, see, so, okay. Now I'm fully connected. Maybe I should have read this a second time.
And there's another hashtag. So that's what I'm saying. It's like hashtag, hashtag. How can you have a double hashtag?
Listen, don't you know how the kids do nowadays?
Well, in 1997, it would have been pound sign hashtag off the grid.
Yes. Look, kids talking hashtags now. That's why I found that whole thing funny with the LOL. It's like, I can't believe you LOL out loud.
Yeah.
Like, my kids do that all the time. You see something funny and they don't laugh. But they're like, LOL. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's not a laugh.
IDK.
All right. Let's rate this up. Ronald?
Since I didn't do decimals, I'm going to go a solid 4. Could be teetering to a 5, but I'm going to stick with a 4.
Very well. Travis.
I do decimals, so I'm going to go 3.75.
Welcome to the only podcast that doesn't have a canonical rating system. I have decided to no longer give ratings, so my rating is... Quick. Thumbs up.
So that's a rating, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess. Not really. All right, let's move on to the next book. Travis, where would you like to go next?
We could do Killer Groove.
Killer Groove, number 4, written by Ollie Masters, with art by Ian Marin, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Ronnie. How do you pronounce his name? Crickets.
Oh, I was on mute. Sorry. I said it while I was on mute.
Ah, okay. Now that you're not on mute.
It is Hassan Ocean LL.
Sure, we'll go with that. My apologies to Hassan for the gross mispronunciation of his name. All right, Travis, tell me about Killer Groove.
Okay, so, like, I feel like in this issue, kind of a lot of it was occupied by flashbacks of one thing or another. Mm-hmm. And kind of I have questions about pretty much all of the flashbacks.
Great.
Right? I mean, so, like, starts out seeing, like, Jackie as a kid and coming up as a cop. And, you know, like a passing reference to what got her kicked off the force. But I'm not sure I understand what it was. Like, she puts a bag of drugs down that seemingly she got off a bus. But, like, what about that turned into a scandal that forced her to resign?
So I think it's a little deeper than that. And it ties into the whole thing with her dad. So the police precinct is very much a boys club, and she's mm-hmm. the only woman that works there. So they, you know, they don't invite her to go to the bar after work or, you know, hang out mm-hmm. or whatever. And so she feels very much like an outsider. And for some reason, she feels like she can use this bag of drugs that she got in a bust and, like, have a good time with the boys. And they're like, that's kind of illegal. So you're fired.
Hmm. All right.
Which that goes with what her dad says at the end, right? About racism and discrimination. Because not only is she a minority, but she's also a woman. And so that is very difficult. And you got to remember, this is set in the, you know, 70s. So things might be hopefully a little different now. Obviously, there's still problems, but it would have been much worse 40 years ago.
Yep, for sure.
So that goes hand in hand with what her dad says, right? Because she's like, hey, you know, dad, like, why don't you give me some encouragement? And he's like, do you think anyone ever gave me encouragement? All these racist assholes. And she's like, all right, dad, I'm just going to do my own thing. So I'm going to be a PI. And she's dead. She's broke because she's got no clients, but at least she doesn't have people telling her what to do, right? And that's kind of the point.
Has no clients because she is a woman and bilingual.
Right.
In the 70s.
Yep. And it also sets up why the girl is now living with her, apparently. The girl whose dad got killed that she was researching.
Mm-hmm.
Because her dad just, like, didn't give two shits about her. So she sees this girl who's got a dad that's gone now. He's dead. And she feels like, well, you know what? I'm going to take care of this girl because nobody took care of me. I thought that the whole flashbacks were really, really well done, I thought. And, of course, all in the 9-panel grid, which works really well for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about, though, like, you know, the scene where, like, that has to do with the bloody bat? Like, is that a flashback, too?
Let me get to that part.
Like, where it's, like, in the apartment and like, there's a...
No, I think that, you know, I think that part, since it's all in color, I think that part's happening now.
Yeah, I just found it. Yeah, that is all happening right now.
Okay, and the people coming to his apartment to talk about it, that's happening now?
Yes. So the way you figure out if it's a flashback or not is, like Ronnie said, if it's in color. So if it's all in color, then it's in the present. If it's in black and white and the character that we're focusing on is in color, then it's a flashback. So the flashbacks we get are from Lucy and Raul, right? Because you see a little bit of why Raul had to leave where he was at.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to take credit, though, for saying that Johnny was going to hit Raul.
Yeah. I think that ended up being maybe a little obvious after last issue, right? Because after last issue, we finally got, like, all the characters together in one place. So you definitely called it. Your prize, should you choose to accept it, is a whole bag of nothing.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the whole bag, though?
Yeah, the whole bag. An entire bag of nothing. You're the
you guys
winner.
Are jelly.
I am, because I used to own the bag of nothing, and now I'm giving it to you. So now I miss my bag of nothing. So the whole thing with Raul I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, I think we, did he explicitly say he was gay before? I think, like, we either assumed that or maybe they mentioned it. I can't remember.
I think we just assumed it.
We assumed it? Okay. But now we know, right? So he was sleeping with the bellboy at this hotel, and by mistake, he ends up killing this mafia guy. I guess he went into the wrong room.
Yep.
And the Sounds mafia right. guy was there with a bag of money and got pissed off, went to shoot him, and Raul killed him. And that's why he had to leave, because there's a hit down on him. And, of course, tying it all back, Johnny is the one that gets hired to take the hit. Did you guys find it weird that Johnny, like, so quickly accepted the job?
I don't know, since it's taken four issues, because I think he's finally figured out that the hits are what are giving him hits, basically.
Right. But he already finished his album.
Yeah, but it's like anything else. You're always trying to chase the dragon, no matter what the addiction is. But his addiction is the music and being able to play good.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't want to go back to not playing good. So obviously he's going to take another hit.
Mm-hmm. He's a terrible hitman, though, because he could have checked to make sure Raul was dead.
Well, yeah. I mean, nobody said that. He was the best.
I mean, he rubbed his hand in the blood. And he's like, yep, I guess he's dead.
Yep.
He could have checked for a pulse. Always check for a pulse.
I mean, like, I think he's been pretty prolific, dude. You know, like, the last issue, there was a whole box of tapes. Like, and each tape, I think, is a body. So he's killed a lot of people. And I think that, like, I didn't necessarily get the sense that his album was done, but I also think that it's not even, like, the first album, you know? Like, I really get the sense that time has passed on, you know, like, in all senses, and I kind of wish that they had paid more attention to what was happening with the actual music stuff, you know? But I get that, like, real estate is limited, so you kind of got to do one or the other, or start subtracting like other plot lines.
Right. Hey, so I'm flipping through this, and I'm curious, Travis, to go back to your question, because I thought maybe you were referencing a different section with the bloody bat. But if I just went after the Raul stuff, and there is a flashback with Johnny and a bloody bat when they're talking about the cop showing up because the Martin kid is missing.
The Martin kid is missing.
Hey, you know.
Shocker.
We'll leave that right there.
That's the message, Martin.
I'm just saying. Let's
watch your back.
Let's put another tick for Martin in Aftershock books.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. And this one died, so.
Hey, you know what? It doesn't matter. Ronnie's first appearance, he was on vacation in Florida.
Yeah. First and only appearance in an Aftershock book. You don't hear me bringing that up every episode.
I'm trying to remind you, Ronnie. Trying to remind you. So maybe Johnny's always had this kind of serial killer instinct. Because that was before he started doing music, right? He's obviously very young in that flashback.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like he ran away from that to become a musician.
Right. Yep. And I guess it would have been a little harder to track him down in the 70s, right, with no computers or cell phones or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't the magic work then?
Maybe it did.
Yeah, maybe it did, because that's when he decided to do music.
All
right. Right? He called his dad. He's like, hey, I'm going to be a musician. Dad's like, all right. Come home, bro.
Yeah. If it did, well, I guess maybe if that was his only person that he killed back then, because then he could have got the quick start and then fizzled out to the bar gigs that we've seen him do in issue one.
Yep. Correct. Which I'm assuming next issue the S is really going to hit the fan, right?
Yeah.
Because the guy that was given him the jobs is killed at the end of this issue.
Yep.
My assumption is the mob has figured out what's going on.
Well, dude, like, my assumption was that it was that Wyatt dude that he's arguing with earlier in the issue.
Maybe.
Because he threatens him with a knife, right?
Right. Maybe.
So, like, I was unclear what was up with that. It's like, it kind of just seemed like he refused to pay for, like, the hit that Johnny did in the last issue.
So you think Wyatt killed the guy because he didn't want to pay?
I feel like they hint at a bigger thing that's going on, but mm-hmm. whether, like, that's just paranoid rantings or whether, like, it's, like, hinting at stuff. Like, I feel like stuff is starting to close up, so I don't know how completely all of these plot threads are going to tie up, mm-hmm. you know? Like, the Lucy thing is, like, I don't know if that all exists just so that, like, she can eventually be adopted by the PI, and, like, if that was the point of that whole plot thread.
Right. Cool. Anything else on Killer Groove? All right. Travis, rate it up.
All right. I'll go 4 out of 5.
I will go thumbs up. Ronnie forgot he's on mute again. Mm-mm-mm. Welcome back, Ronnie.
Thank you.
What's your rating on Killer Groove?
My Killer Groove rating is a 4 out of 5.
Great. Next up is Stronghold number 5. This is the final issue written by Phil Hester with art by Ryan Kelly, colors by D. Cuniff, and letters by Simon Boland. I guess maybe I should take this one. So, where do I want to begin here? I think I'm going to pull a Travis here and, take my bag of nothing back. Cause I think I remember calling pretty early that maybe the Holdmother is not as bad as she seems. And maybe the Stronghold themselves are not as bad as they might appear either. And actually we all called that. So, you know, we'll share the bag of nothing. But I really enjoyed the resolution to this, cause we finally get confirmation that Michael's the one that created this whole thing, right? When he realized that he was basically a murdering machine, he decided to create the Stronghold to block his memories from him remembering that, cause he realized killing billions of people, not a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, we kind of hit the nail on the head, but even though we did, it was still awesome to see it all unfold and how it unfolded.
Yeah, and it was interesting too, right? Because the one thing that resolves this issue is that they actually try to do something different with Michael, right? Which I don't know how they didn't realize this to begin with, because they've been doing the same thing for thousands of years, right? They keep him in this, like, illusory world that they create around him. And then they try to do the same thing. What was it, last issue or the issue before? When they put him in the Matrix, right? Have him live all those simulations. And he ends up breaking out of that. But even though that was maybe at a faster rate, so his mind couldn't keep up as well, eventually at some point he would, right? Realize what's going on, and he did. And that's how we get here. But the way to solve the problem is to have him just accept what he did and have him live happily ever after with this chick. Love is the answer, folks. See, we figured it out.
But I mean, I would say to that, seems like they were following his orders and maybe they didn't have the balls to disobey him. But also, like, a kind of love is the answer type thing is, you know, like, how many good years does Claire still have left, you know? Like, I don't know, 70?
Well, so you say that, but there's some interesting stuff with Claire in this issue. Because she basically, like, brings herself back from the dead and heals herself. So maybe through her interactions with Michael, she has gained some of his power. And I don't think they necessarily, like, explain how that whole thing happens, But they talk about something about the nanites, like, gaining consciousness and, like, doing this on their own without, like, any interaction from Claire or anybody else at the Stronghold. So, I mean, I don't think she'll have the lifespan that Michael would, right? He's, I guess, immortal. But she may have, like, unlocked something inside her that will allow her to be around much longer.
And besides, if you're the Stronghold and you're just doing your job and not being ballsy enough, I mean, would you even think about it being ballsy enough if you knew the answer?
Look, do you know the definition of insanity? It is doing the same thing over again and expecting different results, right?
Yeah, right.
And they're doing the same thing over and over again.
True, I guess, yeah.
I mean, the only one that tries to do something different is the doctor that's been working on these beings that were in the temple, that he resurrects mm-hmm. one and, like, mind controls it, mm-hmm. Thinking that that thing would have enough power to kill Michael, which obviously he should have known is not the case because Michael already defeated it once. And not just right. it by itself. There was, like, a whole group of them. So why would that be any different? I think maybe it's, like, an ego thing. Sure, possibly. But, I mean, he should have known that that was not going to work.
Yeah, good point.
And again, the only way to have Michael stop and do something different with his life is for the Hold Mother to basically sacrifice herself and show him the true memories of his past, right? Because he can, like, assimilate the DNA or whatever into his brain.
Yeah.
So that whole thing was really cool. I really enjoyed a lot of the concepts in this book throughout the whole series. But I think in terms of concluding the series, this book did really, really well. I think we've had some issues with final issues kind of not really resolving much lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this one definitely gives you a resolution. So that was cool to see.
Yep. Resolution in a nutshell. Love is the answer and secrets are bad. Okay.
Okay. yeah, very good. Very good. I love the character design of Michael as this amorphous being thing. I thought it was really cool to see that.
Yeah. It was definitely.
Yep.
Definitely cool.
All right. Yeah. Anything else on Stronghold?
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to add, like, I was kind of, like, pleasantly surprised and intrigued, like, with the reveal I think that he's kind of, like, a watcher in a way, you know? Like...
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that. Yeah.
Right? The nature of his deal is, like, he's not a god, but he's something that supposedly the gods created to,
right.
like, watch the universe, but not intervene, you know? And I mean, like, I guess, I don't know, like it does, like, he snaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
After seeing all of these, like, horrors, and, like, he goes and perpetrates his own horrors and causes more harm than good, you know? So, like, I feel like that suggests a lot of things. Like, you know, why would, you know, the universe set up a mechanism to observe itself, like, just if it couldn't actually take any action, you know? And is it as simple as the, like, you know, thing from Futurama or from, I don't know, God, I had another, like, reference earlier, but, like, as far as, like, kind of, you know, intervening causes more harm than good,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that's why, like, there seems to be kind of, like, this, that's why, like, atrocities are allowed to happen.
Well, I think, yes, I think you're on the right track. So he's created by these beings. I don't know if they're necessarily gods. I think they're just, like, super advanced aliens, to be honest. But he's created to watch over the universe. And it's kind of like, you know how you have the three rules of robotics, right? Like, don't harm humans, like, what it, like, protect yourself unless it interferes. I can't remember what the three rules are. Like, protect yourself unless it goes against rule number one. You know, things like that. So it's almost like that. Like, they create him to watch over the universe. but maybe he's not given these rules. And so not having the rules, maybe the stuff that he was doing, all these wars that ended up being started because of him, were because he didn't know how to properly do his job of being a watcher. And maybe he felt like, oh, you know, these two tribes are at war. Like, let me join this battle and make sure, like, it's resolved. But of course, you know, violence breeds more violence. And so that just breeds more violence, and it's just an escalating thing. And it's when he actually does nothing that things actually come to peace. I think that's a really cool theme. There's like a lot of really cool, like, teachings, I guess. I don't know. In this book, but all veiled in this like metaphor of a comic book story, which is cool. Like, I was listening to a podcast today. I never knew that Battlestar Galactica is based on like Mormon cosmology. But apparently the guy that created Battlestar Galactica was like a super hardcore Mormon. So that's why you have like the 12 tribes and like, the planet Kobold is like some Mormon thing apparently. But it's all veiled in this like sci-fi space adventure, right?
Well, huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either. I learned that today. I was listening to last podcast on the left.
Yep.
So that's cool, right? I think that it's a cool way of talking about certain things without seeming preachy, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you understand the story and what it's about and how the elements work together, then you get some kind of life lesson at the end. And I don't know how any of that was planned. Like, I don't know anything about Phil's ideas of how the universe works or anything like that. But there's definitely a lot of things in this book throughout. I think I've mentioned some of them in previous conversations on previous issues. But there's like a lot of cool, like, Gnostic ideas, some like Hindu philosophy kind of stuff in here that I find really interesting. But it's veiled in a comic book story.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that can go by the wayside, right? You can miss some of that stuff. Like, if you want, one of my favorite movies is The Matrix. And I feel old because it's like, how old now? 25 years old?
1999. Like, yeah. 20 years old, right?
Yes. But like, but The Matrix is like almost verbatim, like the Gnostic creation story, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's veiled in this sci-fi adventure that takes place in a computer. So it's cool. I like that kind of stuff, right? Because you can take it at face value and just enjoy it for entertainment. But you can also dig a little deeper and get some cool elements out of it. And I think out of any book that Aftershock has ever put out, I think this book has the most of that kind of stuff. Maybe like Animosity is pretty close because Animosity has a lot of deep stuff, but I think Animosity is a little, more transparent about what it's trying to say, than this book is.
Wow. Even compared to like Baby Teeth or Dark Ark even?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Good take. Good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. I'm going to rate this book thumbs up.
That's so dumb.
Hey, it's the new Netflix rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. It's the old Facebook rating, too.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I know. Well, for people who have listened to this show for 110 episodes, I'm going to give it a number rating, like we always do. And this issue, I'm going 4 out of 5, but the whole series, I'm going to go 5 out of 5.
Very good. Travis, what's your decimal score?
I'll do 4.5 out of 5. I agree with you guys. I think that this was a really strong final issue. You know, I think they really tied stuff together in a satisfying way. So, like good on ya.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And that takes us to this week's books. Ronnie, it's back to your pick.
Oh, it's back to my pick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go with Knights Templorial then.
All right. Knights Templorial number 2, written by, I've never heard this name, Cullen Bunn. I think that's how you pronounce it. Art by Fran Gallant with letters by Dave Sharp. This Fran Gallant is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Word.
Yeah. All right, Ronnie, tell me about Knights Temporal.
Well, we get some questions answered in this. And you know what? I don't want to talk too much about it. I'll let you guys discuss that part.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to talk about is the art in this real fast. Because, like, if you look at the first, I don't know, just throughout the whole thing, the dark and gritty, like where they're in World War, or war, in the war scenes is like dark and gritty like it's supposed to be. But then when you're in the now or in the future part, it's like bright. Even like, it's just, even the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the pastel colors, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it doesn't work in books, but like right here, the contrast of the pastel and then against the dark and gritty, like in the shards of glass part,
mm-hmm.
works really good.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate when you can actually tell the difference between present day and a flashback sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which and, we've talked about when we're talking about Killer Groove.
Yep. And he gives off that like Han Solo-esque vibe.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, I think there were some interesting turns in this story, in this issue, I mean. Mm-hmm. With, what is it, August, right? That's his name, August de Revere?
Yep. Yep.
When he starts exploring his time travel antics, I think, Travis, was it you that mentioned about this girl being a little off to you, or was it, was Ronnie on that episode?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I mean, like, in the last issue, she murders the guy who's trying to tell him, like, about his past self,
mm-hmm.
and then hides it from him, you know? Like, and, like, in this issue, it seems like they're in the library, and she's doing everything that she can to try and keep him from, like, that line of inquiries, which would reveal kind of his past iterations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what her deal is, if she's, like, in league with Gaspard or whatever.
So is this situation kind of like with Michael and Stronghold, where maybe they're trying to keep him from some information? Because when he has a girl doing that research in the library, you see his medieval self, right, which we've seen in that first issue. But then you start seeing all these other incarnations of him, right? Like mm-hmm. the Rivers Gang, the Western Outlaws. Mm-hmm. She talks about like how bad they were, and they were just like go around from town to town just killing random people. Just for fun. And that doesn't seem like the guy that we met in the first issue, right? Because it seemed like a knight that was trying to kill this evil sorcerer. But just based on that one flashback alone, it seems like maybe that's not really the whole story.
Yeah, I got that feeling too.
Right? Like, he's forgotten who he is,
who
right?
he was.
Yeah. Like, yeah. All he knows is he just travels through time in different places, and he has to find Gaspard.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't know, like, why or anything, right? I don't get the impression that he knows why.
Right. And I think that would be a cool twist on it also.
Yeah.
Because, the only reason is because I think in, like, Stronghold, and from issue one, it was questioned whether who was good and who was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's not so cut and dry.
For sure.
I mean, my obviously, I think we were talking about that in the last issue, that there's some reference about, like, Gaspard and August, like, going into this, you know, device or whatever, you know, the way. And, like, one of them, I think, was seeking redemption and the other was seeking corruption, I think was the quote. And, like, in this issue, obviously, you know, like, they kind of reference his original iteration in the, like, as a knight. And my read was that he kind of acknowledged that he's like, oh, yeah, I did bad stuff or whatever. He's like, I know about that. So it's like, that was my read that, like, his kind of medieval self had done bad things and was, like, after it gets barred for redemption. But like, as far as the more recent iterations, you know, obviously we see in this issue, like in the Wild West town, the people are turning into demons by all appearances. Right. And that's also what you see in the previous issue. And maybe we're seeing that like as well in the library, that it's just normal people turning into demons, or maybe it's like, it's all an illusion or whatever. So I guess that is the question, is like, are they really changing, or, you know, do they change back to human after they're killed or whatever? You know, that's my read on that dynamic.
Or maybe he's in a mental hospital and Gaspard is his doctor and he's just living these weird, like, psychotic delusions.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
A twist.
I'm just throwing that out there. The only reason I thought about that, so as I'm reading this, I'm like, well, is August actually Gaspard? Because in that flashback, he's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I found interesting that I thought that, because that kind of plays on like knowing who the good guy and the bad guy is, right? We don't really know.
Right.
And we assumed he was a good guy, but after seeing this, like, maybe he's not. So I'm like, oh, maybe he's Gaspard. But then we actually see Gaspard. So then I can assume that he's not him, but you see Gaspard going into this dungeon and there's August in there. And he says, let me pull it up. He says, is it time for the both of us to fulfill our promises? And that's, it seems like a really weird thing to say, right? Gaspard says promises and he says, yeah, for the terrible things I've done, you swore you would help me kill myself.
Yeah. So that would, sounds like something that a psychiatrist or a doctor would say, for sure, to snap him back.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's something that Cullen would do, right?
Yeah.
But again, right. I don't want to judge that.
Yeah.
But it could be interesting. We'll see.
Yeah.
If that's not the case, though, then this Gaspard guy is a terrible person, because he promised August he would help him kill himself, and yet he's just having him travel through time and space, like, continuously doing the same thing over and over again.
Well, if you're the bad guy, obviously you're going to go back on your promise.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I would if I was a bad guy.
You're such a bad guy.
Rate me up.
All right.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wait. I got one more question for you guys.
Yes. Just,
like, not to make a big thing of it, but like, I'm very curious what's going on, like, with kind of the interaction between past and present. You know, like, he's trying to pull the sword and he can't pull the sword because, like, him in the past has the sword. And then, like, he gets wounded and passes the wound back to the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's something happening with that, right? So maybe if he finds, like, his other ancestors, like, he gets more entangled with them, too.
I don't know. But they're not ancestors, the same person.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yes, but he is entangled. Yeah, I don't know. There could be some interesting stuff in terms of what you just said that I hadn't thought of, but, yeah. I don't know if I want to go there, to be honest with you. Then we're going to start talking physics, and that'll bore everybody.
But if it's all a hallucination or whatever, like you said, then I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. It could be that, but I don't know. That actually piques my interest now.
Hmm.
It piques my interest. I got to think about that a little bit more. We'll pick that exact topic up next issue when we have some more. But it does seem like maybe all this stuff is happening at once. All right, let's rate it up.
Rate it.
Well, you're first this time.
Theme of the show, I'm still going 4 out of 5.
God, you're such a Debbie Downer.
How am I a Debbie Downer?
Be more creative. Why are you picking the same rating every time?
Well, then Aftershock should make bad books, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. You know what? I'm going to pick the same rating, too. I'm going to pick a thumbs up.
Oh, boy.
Travis?
All right. I'll go 4.25.
This guy in his damn decimal places, I tell you.
See, I can't have anybody give me a straight answer. I get one guy that says thumbs up or thumbs down, and I get one guy that gives me damn decimal.
Indeed. All right, that leads us to the final book of this week, and that is Mary Shelley, Monster Hunter, number 5. This is written by Adam Glass and Olivia Quartero Briggs, with art by Hayden Sherman, letters by Sal Cipriano and Travis. Hit me up!
Hit me up.
Maybe one more time.
You know, he leaves for 5 weeks and he quotes Paula Abdul and Britney Spears. What's going on? What have you been doing these past 5 weeks, Ronnie?
Apparently living in the past.
Travis.
All right. I guess I'll kick it off. Okay. So I guess like broadly speaking, you know, this issue starts, they're fighting Adam, and you know, they win. But Adam kind of warns, like, you're going to see me on your wedding night. Like, fast forward to the wedding, and he kills Franny, who, you know, previously was revealed as, like, a thing that Mary loved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he writes a message that, like, I'm going to kill everyone you love or whatever. And then, basically, it like, cuts back to the modern-day frame, and she's like, oh, also, you know, like, there's other stuff in this manuscript about, you know, all their other monster hunting exploits. And, you know, Adam is there and he's, I don't know what the implication is that, like, he's going to kill her now or something. But, you know, that's kind of how it all wraps up, right?
Yes. I mean, it wraps up with Adam fulfilling his promise for eternity, right? Because we cut back to the present day, and you have the girl that we met in the first issue, and she's killed by Adam. So I guess anybody that is remotely related to Mary Shelley at some point will just get killed by Adam.
But why does he resent Mary more than he resented, Dr. Frankenstein?
Because Mary is the one that ripped the head off the Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay.
So he's like, all right, you killed the one that I loved. Now I'm going to kill everyone that you love.
And that extends to a museum curator who stumbled upon her manuscript in the future.
Correct.
Well, good thing he was there that night. You know, otherwise, you might not even know that happened. Or he lives in the museum.
He could. Maybe he does. I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. I like the I think in terms of a final issue, maybe not as strong as Stronghold, but there were some interesting wrap-ups done here. I liked in particular some of the other historical events. After, you know, she's at the Castle Frankenstein, right? When she tries to publish a novel. Yes, I am a nerd, because you forget I was an English major in college.
Yeah.
So that was actually some of my favorite stuff, because she tries to get the manuscript published, and she basically writes it exactly like it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this being the 1800s, the publisher's like, we can't have Frankenstein be a woman. No one's going to believe that there's this woman doctor.
Which we kind of called that early on, right?
Right. Yeah, I think we talked about that when Frankenstein herself was talking about pretending to be a man to be able to go to med school.
Oh, I thought we talked about it before that, like when they issued the challenge of whose story was going to get published.
Oh, you're right. Yep, you're right. So that was interesting then. So he has to change some other things to make it more fictionalized. Partially because if they sell this as a true story, she's an accessory to murder because she killed the Bride of Frankenstein,
mm-hmm.
right? So that can't happen. And then Percy is the one that shot Adam. So they can't have any of that stuff. So she has to change that story for that. And of course, all that is kind of historically somewhat accurate, because there was this contest, and the contest is mentioned. Because after Mary and her husband leave, he's like, oh, yeah, that Lord Byron story. Like, I really love that story. And that's like a whole can of worms there. I think a lot of the stuff in this issue, like, you have to know that, like, you have to be a damn nerd to get the whole thing.
Yeah.
So there was this contest, and one of the stories entered was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. The other one was The Vampire, which is often attributed to Lord Byron, who shows up in this issue quite a bit. But he actually did not write the story. The story was actually written by John Polidori, who also shows up in this issue. He's at the wedding reception. And, he actually shows up towards the latter end of the book. Cause Mary's looking for, her, what's the girl's name?
Granny.
Yeah.
Granny.
Yes. So she's looking for her and, as a result, bumps into Lord Byron, who's talking to Bram Stoker in this room. And Bram Stoker's like, you can't publish this book because the vampire's going to come get you. Right. So obviously, like, there's some further connection, right? Like, this could be the start of a universe of books or of comics relating to these fictionalized retellings of these, like, classic romantic horror stories. Obviously Bram Stoker wrote Dracula. Lord Byron is credited for The Vampire. But he didn't write it. And that's why when Mary's talking to him and then she leaves is when Polidori shows up, and they're having a conversation. That has to do, I think, with that confusion, right? So part of the reason that it's attributed is because the publisher thought Lord Byron wrote it. That's why that's mentioned when Mary and her husband are talking about publishing the book at his office. So again, a lot of like insider baseball. So, literature nerds, this one's for you, bros.
I thought that it was that, like, Byron did write a novel fragment at the retreat about vampires, and that Polidori made that into a novel called The Vampire.
Correct. And that's part of the confusion.
Yeah.
We just went super nerdy.
We went super nerdy. However, again, that whole scene is really cool, because then maybe the next book is Lord Byron, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That could be cool.
Yeah.
Like, well, a whole... he was already part of the gang, right?
Yeah, but he met a vampire, bro.
Alright, yeah.
This could be like the Monster Squad.
Yeah. What was that book? Who put that out? I think maybe Boom put it out. It was, like a descendant of Frankenstein, and she was a monster hunter, and they were like descendants of other
monsters? Like, Universal monsters?
No. It wasn't Universal Monsters.
No, I'm saying they were descendants of other Universal monsters.
Yes. But they were like a monster squad. Like, they hunted. Yeah.
It might have been Boom, because I remember it.
Yeah, I think that came out last year. That was a cool book. All right. Anything else on this?
Nope. Nothing for me, but go ahead, Travis.
Well, I was going to say, I like your suggestion that maybe it could come back with, like, minis on other monsters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Vampires, werewolves, mummies. I kind of wish that there was a little bit more of a hint of, in this issue, like, why they would turn the corner into now just fighting whatever, like... Monster of the Week.
Well, no. I'm not saying that, like, Mary Shelley will be back. I'm saying you can have other stories told in this time period with other characters. So, like, the next book won't be, like, Mary Shelley Monster Hunter and they go see Dracula. It'll be, like, Lord Byron goes to Transylvania and sees Dracula or whatever, some kind of vampire. And then that inspires his story.
Lord Byron, Vampire Hunter.
There you go. Like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Great book, terrible movie.
Yep.
I just think that'd be cool.
and Hayden Sherman needs to do the art.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, in terms of like literature, it's a really interesting time because there's like a lot of like proto horror and proto sci-fi stuff that starts showing up around this time period. And we know that Adam loves doing this historical fiction kind of stuff, right?
Yep.
So it'd be totally up his alley to do it.
Yeah. And he super nerds out on it too.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe we should have Adam on and talk about this stuff.
Again?
And you guys can fall asleep. No, I'm talking about the literary references, bro.
Well, we had him on once and you didn't show up, so.
Well, it's not that I didn't show up. I got stuck at work. I was there in spirit.
Adam Glass writing, I know.
I was there in spirit. I love Adam Glass. You shut your mouth. I'm gonna block you on Twitter now.
All right, good. New phone, who dis?
That was hilarious. All right, let's rate it up. Thumbs up.
I'm going 5 out of 5.
I'll go 4 out of 5.
Whoa,
what?
No decimal?
No, I feel good. 4.0 out of 5.
Mark it on the calendar.
If it's 4.0, is it really a decimal?
Well, yes. It's still a decimal.
It's precise.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Aftershock Central Podcast. Next week, we have a large chunk of books. We have Animosity 23, Dark Red number 6, Descendant number 5, and a brand new book that I'm very excited for, Midnight Vista number 1.
By Elliot Rahal.
Yes, about an alien abduction.
Based on a true story life event.
That's right.
Yep.
I can't wait to see this.
Yep. First we get Fargo, now we get Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm.
We get Fargo Season 2. Spoilers. Spoilers for Fargo.
That's right. So I will not be here next week, but I think Travis and Ronnie will be. So that's cool.
That's super cool.
So cool. Happy birthday to Phil Hester.
Belated, yep.
Belated, yes. But we forgot to mention that earlier, so I figured I'd throw that in there. And that's it. Twitter. @Romo316, @TheGreatMagnet, @GeekVine, @AftershockPod. See you next time.